I mean, I love the how you started that off, Adam. Yes, we need to begin this episode talking about how amazing this league is and how amazing Scott Fish is, man. Like, got a chance to finally meet him at FSGA, had more than a few drinks, good times all around, man. And for all the stuff that's discussed out on social media, like, yes, yeah, Scott Fish is a nice guy, blah, blah. It is all absolutely true.
It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. And today, we are celebrating the launch of the fantasy football season. Scott Fishbowl's kicked off, baby! Adam and I are going to discuss our drafts in Scott Fish, walk through the scoring settings, and some of our, I mean, look, how we're attacking this draft. I mean, Adam, where are you at on this draft, and how are you feeling so far, my friend?
Dude, it is draft season. It is here. We got SFB, which is, I kind of talked about it the other day. I feel like SFB, like the launch, is pretty much like when you know that football season is right around the corner, right? And then we have a dynasty startup we're both in. But as far as SFB, we just kicked off the eighth round. I know your division is absolutely just smoking everybody, and
sprinting, baby. Yeah. We are sprinting.
We were not too far behind you, but we had it was a little bit slower yesterday. But yeah, I had the 101, so I just kicked off the eighth round this morning. But this has been a really fun draft, and the settings change every year. So we'll talk about some, you know, because there's a lot of people who are obviously, ourselves included, lucky enough to be invited to SFB every year. But there are some people who have been wanting to get in this league and didn't get a chance to join it, but like they want to know what it's about, and some people don't even know what it is somehow, even though Scott Fish is the hardest working man in the industry and the nicest guy of all time. But yeah, it'll be fun to talk about our strategies, what our teams look like, and the scoring, because that's always one of the more exciting days too, is when Scott posts the scoring for the new league and everybody starts to kind of imagine what they're going to do on draft day.
I mean, I love how you started that off, Adam. Yes, we need to begin this episode talking about how amazing this league is and how amazing Scott Fish is, man. Like, got a chance to finally meet him at FSGA, had more than a few drinks, good times all around, man. And for all the stuff that's discussed out on social media, like, yes, Scott Fish is a nice guy, blah, blah, it is all absolutely true.
Yeah, there's a ton of legitimacy to it when every single other person in the industry is also saying it. Like, it's not like it's a couple people here and there, like, yeah, he's a good guy. Like, no, it's everybody, because it's facts. It is 5,000% fact.
I'm going to leave this off with the fact that, like, when I first met Scott at FSGA, literally, I get off the elevator, walk out to the terrace for the kickoff party, and 2 seconds, I'm at the table trying to get my name tag, and Scott walks up and gives me a hug, and I'm like, hi, what's up? Like, guy is super amazing, and we got to talk about this, man. The money that he has raised over the last few years for Toys for Tots has been outstanding, and you have seen this become a tidal wave across fantasy football. Other, like, satellite leagues. I'm in Eliminators that also raise money. There are other leagues that have also popped up because of what Scott Fish has done here that have raised such a mountain of money and changed the lives for children, people that need food. There are so many other various, like, entities that have popped up because of what Scott has done that, like, we need to sit here and give homage to this man and the waves that he's created that have helped to improve the quality of life for so many different people based off of a game about a game. So that has to be mentioned before we discuss anything else, our drafts, settings, all those other parts, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, like, what Scott does in it, like, himself, and I can't imagine, you know, what each day looks like for him, especially, you know, the next couple weeks while these drafts are going. But, like, not only does Scott do it, it inspires everybody else to kind of, you know, donate and you know, and kind of get involved. And like, that's why the fantasy community as a whole is so awesome, because everybody else sees the example Scott sets, and everybody else is easily and quickly willing to get on board. So it's just a great community, and SFB is obviously like the draft. No, like, let's be honest, and I'm gonna be honest, like, we it's not like we go into these drafts like choosing bad players on purpose, but like, am I really going to this draft and preparing saying I have to win? I'm not like, that's not how I approach these leagues every year. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be mainly for a great cause and to help others and to just kind of continue to grow. I mean, you talk about it. You get in group chats with people in your division or people that have the same picks as you, and you meet new people, and that's always fun too. So it's like, I really don't. Would it be cool to win? Sure, absolutely. Everybody likes to win. But do I care? Do I go into Scott Fishbowl every year saying, all right, I'm winning Scott Fishbowl. I don't care. This is my 100% focus is to win this. Like, it's not. It's not at all. And that's, I think that's the best part, honestly.
I'm in agreement, man. And let's rewind this for a second here. The fact of, like, I even see any kind of just venom or poison out on social media about, like, anything that anybody has to be negative about Scott Fishbowl and what we're doing here, you can go ahead and block me, unfollow me. I don't really give two shits, because that is terrible. You need to delete those tweets, get off social media, and go grow a conscience or a better brain hole, because I don't understand for the life of me, and have never understood, anybody that is going to throw out there and be salty about not getting into a massive charity league that does so many good things for everybody in existence, just don't even worry about interacting with me on social media, because I'm not about that life. Yeah, so if you're not on board with that, and you're not on board with trying to sit here and improve the lives of others through a game about a game, then peace out. You don't have to listen to this podcast. You don't have to consume this content. You don't have to follow me on Twitter. You're better off just staying in your own lane.
Yeah. Like, it's, again, like I said, like, this entire league and setup is about helping the quality of life of, again, not just, obviously there's a ton of charities, and that's honestly the best part, but it's also just everybody else that's involved. You're making new friends. You're getting, you know, more involved with the community, which is always, you know, always a good thing, because you're just meeting more people. And it's just, yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate enough not to have seen a lot of negativity surrounding SFB on my terrible timeline. So I'll just kind of keep it at that and hope it stays that way, because for any reason for there to be any sort of negativity surrounding this league or anything about it is just asinine.
It's stupid, man. And people that gets all salty about it. Like, and I've never understood it. I still don't understand it. Like, I've literally watched Scott, like, while we're at FSGA, sending out invites by random people he met throughout the conference. Like, inviting people just based off of, like, interactions, conversations. Like, and over half of the field this year is first-time entries into SFB. So, if you want to throw anything out there and you're not happy about the fact that you didn't get in, you need to refocus about what all this is about and get off of that train immediately, man. So let's jump into the score settings and talk about some other things, because I don't want to stay on this negativity train too long regarding something that we both feel is amazing for the fantasy football industry. So let's celebrate this, Adam. Tell me, how are you attacking these score settings, and kind of lay them out for everybody?
Yeah, so first of all, if you are in the league or not in the league and you just want to make sure you know all the rules, obviously you can check out the rules on the, you know, the MFL page or SFB, but you can also check out the site at FTN Fantasy. Tyler Lochner, this was now, a couple days ago, I think it was July 5th, really broke down the scoring settings, the formats of the rosters, and how it's different from your traditional fantasy football league. So make sure you check that out. But every year this is a Superflex league, so that, you know, I don't think we need to walk you through a Superflex, but it's just in case you're new and you're new to fantasy football, that's awesome. Welcome. Superflex, you're starting any position at your flex. Obviously, Superflex means you can start a quarterback, so the majority of people will start a quarterback. The scoring is interesting, though, because you got to be careful of which quarterbacks you're selecting, right? Everybody, we talked about this before we got on the show. Mahomes, Kyler, Josh Allen, Lamar, like these guys are going to be great. We know that. But when you're getting to your second and third quarterbacks, you have to really, you can't just say, okay, this guy's in a good offense and he's got upside and he has mobility and whatever, because you lose a point per sack in this league, which isn't like massive, but it's something to keep an eye on. You also lose 4 points, 4 points for an interception. That can be massive. I mean, that's a difference between a lot of these quarterbacks being like guys prior to the league starting. You're like, okay, I'm pretty good at quarterback. And then all of a sudden you have one quarterback who's giving you positive points every week. There's a lot of times you're getting negative points. So that's huge. Minus 4 points for an interception. And then for the other passing stats, you get a half a point per completion. So, and then minus 1 point per incompletion. So you're looking for efficient quarterbacks. Maybe some of those low ADOT quarterbacks are a little bit more appealing in this format, like a Ben Roethlisberger, right? He's been pretty popular in this format because last year, what did we see from Ben Roethlisberger? A bad offensive line, no ability to throw the ball down the field. But we had a graphic tweeted out on FTN Fantasy about the stats, how he's been among the league leaders in, among the league leaders last year in terms of average second per throw, because that was the way the Steelers system was operating. That's the offensive line that they had to mask that. And he's good in this format because he didn't turn the ball over a ton and he didn't take a lot of sacks because they were just getting the ball out of his hands quickly. And those were highly converted targets to Juju Smith-Schuster, Deontay Johnson, etc. So he's actually really good in this format. So you just got to understand that, because in my draft, Daniel Jones, I needed my second quarterback. Daniel Jones and Carson Wentz were on the board one pick before me. And I was really hoping Carson Wentz was there so I didn't have to consider Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones got picked, and I was, you know, as much as I you've heard me, I like Daniel Jones in redraft this year. I'm very intrigued by him. But in this format, with that bad offensive line and how turnover prone he can be, I'm good. I'm staying away from that. So every league, it's knowing your settings, knowing your scoring. I don't think there is a more appropriate example of that than an SFB.
Absolutely, man. And you're talking about the quarterbacks here. I broke this down. I had an SFB strategy article that went live before SFB kicked off. You can still head over to FTN Fantasy, check that out right now. Obviously, free to read. With this, and what I looked at based off of the scoring settings last year, which, again, we're talking about, Scott made some other small wrinkles added on to this year. But with quarterbacks, the score settings for this league are massively weighted towards quarterbacks and high-volume running backs. Like, you looked at, like, the top 50 players, 75% of the top 50 players in scoring were either quarterbacks or running backs. And that, if that doesn't tell you about the scoring settings, I don't know what will. So with the quarterbacks, I love that you brought up, yes, the sacks, yes, the interceptions. But that's also why, like, we've talked about, like, our outlook for Cam Newton, our outlook for Ryan Fitzpatrick for this year. Do we like them? Yes. Are their offenses going to be good? Yes. Could they cripple you in this league based off of interceptions? Oh, yeah. Both of them both have above 2% interception rates over their entire careers, which is not great in this format. You want to talk about Cam Newton and the job certainty and things of that nature? That's fine as well. But, like, Fitzpatrick could bury you with a negative score in any single week. As much as we like him in Washington, that could still help. Like, I mean, like, that could still help guide your strategy here on guys that you're willing to sit here and avoid. The sacks, I don't really care about because it's not sticky. The interceptions is what I'm focusing on and how that can bury you in the scoring, as well as elevate. Like, Joe Burrow is a fantastic target in this format. Tua is another fantastic target. I mean, based off of the limited sample we saw last year, really took care of the ball, did not throw a lot of interceptions. I don't think that changes with a better offensive line and skill players around him. So, I mean, looking at the quarterback settings, that's kind of how I'm attacking it.
I like Baker backs, a lot in this format, too.
Yeah, I do like Baker.
Especially with Kevin Stefanski there. Like, last year, obviously it's going to be run-heavy scheme, so it's going to limit his, you know, obvious passing attempts. But in this league, you don't care because the way they used Baker was a lot, when they throw the ball with him, is a lot of kind of bootleg, getting him out to the right where he's really accurate and getting completions of the tight ends and Jarvis Landry. Like, Baker in this format is somebody I tried to get really badly, and he went a little bit earlier than I thought because he is really good in this format. There's a lot of quarterbacks we haven't talked about in this podcast much, Baker being one of them, because, like, they're good. They're good NFL quarterbacks, but in fantasy, their upside's capped. But those Teddy types of quarterbacks too. In this
Teddy's
league.
Teddy's a good one.
Yeah, yeah, Teddy too, exactly. But those quarterbacks are much better in this format because you get the points per completion. They, you know, they aren't going to throw as many interceptions as somebody like, you know, Daniel Jones, Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I mean, Kirk Cousins is a guy that's always been a pretty high completion percentage guy. So like a lot of these quarterbacks get massive, massive, massive boosts. And then a lot of them also, and it's not going to be the high end, you know, top seven guys. You pretty much feel as good as you do about them in any format. But it's where it's like I said, it's where you get to the second and third quarterbacks when you're filling out the rest of your roster, to where you really need to be aware of the settings, the system the quarterbacks are in, how they're used. And luckily, we have incredible stats at FTN Fantasy and incredible content to paint that picture, like I mentioned with Ben Roethlisberger and some of these other quarterbacks.
Well, and then we get into, I talked about scoring finishes for last year. I've been fading wide receivers in this format based off of how the scoring is set up, you know, because also tight ends, this is a tight end premium league.
Yeah,
tight
I should have led with extra, that. Tight end premium.
Yep. I mean, they get an extra 0.5 per reception. They also get the first downs here. And the first downs regarding that also like changed how I looked at quarterbacks too, because I mean, if you head over to FTN Fantasy, my SFB ranks were up. I mean, look, if you have the ability to not only throw touchdowns, but you're keeping the interceptions low and you're going to run, that Konami factor with the first downs is also going to sit here and add something to your abilities in SFB. So whether you're looking at tight ends, I mean, you look at the correlations for first downs. I mean, it's really just a volume stat. Like, if you look at all the rushers and all the receivers that got a lot of first downs last year, it really just correlates to targets and to volume. I mean, especially in the early downs for rushers. So do some of the running backs, I feel like there are tier breaks. So some of the running backs where we're like, okay, they're going to get 15 to 20 touches. What do those touches look like on a weekly basis? Are they on the ground? Are they via the air? I mean, could they catch first downs? Yes, but again, heading over to FTN and you're looking at a lot of these first read stats and our quarterbacks looking for those dump down options for the first downs, if that's not the case, I lean to volume runners.
It's too bad Alex Smith isn't playing this year, so JD McKissick would have been a great pick.
Yes.
Would have been an awesome pick.
Yeah, he would have been an awesome pick.
But
man.
That's what makes this league fun. It's like the players in your traditional redraft league that are going the 14th, 15th round. That's like, okay, I'll put him on my bench in case somebody gets hurt or bye weeks. But like some of those players shoot up 3-4 rounds in SFB because of the scoring, which is why like this league, we talked about the importance of this league and have it being about the community and charity and everything. And that's the focal point. But like this league, the fact that Scott and everybody changes the leagues in some way in the scoring every year just adds another wrinkle to making this just the most fun. There's no secret why everybody wants to be in SFB. There's no secret.
No secret. And I love it because not only is it like you don't have the ability to trade, we do have waivers, but it's so deep, Adam. Like it's 22 rounds. I feel like we're in a dynasty startup in doing this redraft league because we're going so deep that if you have the dynasty knowledge of like, okay, who are the either quarterbacks that I'm going to target late? Like if there's an injury that I want to have because I don't want to blow all my fab because if a quarterback goes down in SFB, I can promise you people will empty the damn clip for a quarterback based off of their fab. I mean, we saw that with all the Andrew Luck news. People were emptying the clip to get even Jacoby Brissett. Like, so how you're going to attack this, I almost kind of treat this like some teams treat like the NFL draft. Like, okay, I'm going to select this player at the end of my draft so I'm not fighting with anybody for waivers or like NFL teams do. We're going to draft this guy the last round, so we're not going to sit here and have to like fight with other teams to sign you as a UDFA. I don't want to worry about that. So is that part of like how I'm attacking Scott Fish? Yeah, absolutely, dude. But let's walk through these drafts, man. I know we're at different points. Do you want me to kind of lead this off, considering my division is flying through this draft so far?
Yeah, I mean, considering you guys are in warp speed right now, I mean, I'm assuming your division is still, not that it's a race and no, you don't get extra, you know, you don't get bonus points. For finishing, but I'm assuming your team is still ahead of the pack. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're top 12 rounds. Yeah, last time I looked, we were top. We were first or second in for the fastest draft. And I'm going to give you a little preview. I mean, maybe I'm fortune telling for you for the picks you're going to make for today or tomorrow, whenever you get to these points, Adam. but yes, we are in the 12th round right now. Right now in our draft. No, actually, we are in the 13th round. Excuse me. 1304, our draft sits at in the Mighty Chemical Romance division. But yeah, I mean, man, like, so for my draft right now, I picked from the 102, and I was like, look, I am going quarterback. I'm going to get another quarterback at this spot. I went with Kyler Murray. I felt like, again, perfect marriage of the Konami aspect, the first downs, as well as I think this offense is going to be better this year. After I went Kyler, I went CEH. Also throwing in the wrinkle, because I forgot about it, just absolute transparency until I was on the clock and I was like, woo, get 211 and the 302 pick. And I'm like, I'm going to go CEH and I'm going to go Antonio Gibson. I'm going to get some running backs in my life or maybe go running back quarterback. And then I take Clyde Edwards-Helaire and I was like, where's my 302 pick? What? I don't know. But that you know third funny? Round reversal. It hit me, man.
I was talking to the group chat we have for my division, like before the or like in the beginning or the middle of the first round, and I was telling I was like talking about it, about how there's that third round reversal this year. So I was definitely aware of it. And then when I went to the same spot as you, I was like, all right, cool, got my running back, I can double down, I can go quarterback. And I was like, and then somebody asked, like, are you still on the clock? And I said, yeah, I'm making my second selection now. And somebody posted a screenshot. They're like, dude, you're not on the clock. And I'm like, oh yeah, there's a third round reversal. So I definitely forgot as well.
Dude, I totally forgot about it. I knew about it walking into it, and then I got on the clock, and I blanked. I forgot about it. But after that, Joe Burrow did last into the 311, so I was happy to get my second quarterback there. Then I went TJ Hockenson at the 402, Javonte Williams, Cooper Kupp. Then I started hitting wide receivers. So Cooper Kupp, Chase Claypool, Rashad Bateman, both the chat and also my DMs have blown up that I took him at wide receiver 30, and am I insane? And my only response to that is, one, it's charity league. Two, we're here to have fun. I'm going to get players that I want.
And
I am
three,
on team,
and,
get you
and,
guys.
And three, yes, you are insane. Like, don't, you're definitely
fine.
Insane.
I'll own it. Absolutely.
No, not for that pick. Not for that pick, just in general. You're insane, and we love it.
I mean, look, man, you got to be who you are. So then,
that's again, the thing we didn't even get into. Not the fact that you're insane. There's what, over 1,000 teams in this league. 1,000.
1,900, my friend.
Okay,
1,900.
Yeah, nearly, yeah. So you have to, you know, you're gonna have to make some stances on players like you do in traditional drafts, but especially in this. So I even did that in some of my or not some of my drafts in my draft. When I talk about my team, I'm drafting players in this league that I haven't really drafted in our mocks and redraft and our other leagues and our underdog drafts we've done. Like, and you have to kind of have that approach. You can't just say, okay, I've been drafting Keenan Allen and Michael Thomas in the 2-3 turn, and then I follow it with Javonte Williams in the fourth. Like, you could, if you like those guys, draft them, but it's like you have to get different in this league too.
Oh, you have to, man, and you got to get your guys. Like, so we're attacking this. We're talking about this. It's basically a large field season-long GPP. You got to get your guys. And look, if you're right, you're right. Then Yahtzee. But, like, I'm going to have fun with it. Going to go get my players. So, again, I took Cooper Kupp in the sixth round, Chase Claypool in the seventh. Went Rashad Bateman, got Michael Carter in the ninth round. Then we've been talking about Big Mike. I got Mike Williams in the 10th round. And now, before I tell you these next two picks, anybody stand out from this roster as far as like, oh my Lord, you took him early? Or, I mean, tell me your thoughts on this team so far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you drafted anybody like massively ahead. Like, okay, maybe some people will say Rashad Bateman, but like I did this in our dynasty startup. Like, I drafted CeeDee Lamb really early, and again, it's dynasty, so he's going early anyway, but I drafted him ahead of a bunch of really established receivers, and it was because, A, I love CeeDee Lamb, but also, I'm not getting him if I don't take him here. You might not have been getting Rashad Bateman when you took him there, if you didn't take him there. So yeah, I mean, Michael Carter, I would have been worried if you didn't draft him, to be honest, at this point, over the last 2 weeks.
This is one of those tweets where it says I've been kidnapped.
Yeah, exactly. So like I have one of those players that I talked about a lot that I drafted that we'll get into that. Like if I didn't draft him, people would probably be worried. So no, I think your team's dope. And I, like you you told me about it. We've been talking in Slack and stuff like that, because we got off to somewhat of a similar start with our teams. But yeah, I do like your team. I don't think anything's out of the ordinary at all.
So in the 11th and 12th rounds, I decided to, this could be hindsight and I could hate these picks, but I hedged a little bit. I mean, look, all the other teams had two quarterbacks.
This is fun,
so far,
by the way. Buckle your seatbelts, everyone. This is fun.
I really, really off brand. And this entire team is so off brand for me. My 11th and 12th round picks, I decided, because I had close picks at the 11-11 and 12-02, to go ahead and double-tap quarterback, get my third quarterback in the house, because I saw that there was a little mini quarterback run, as well as looking at where the position is, all these other teams had two quarterbacks, and if I waited any longer, there was another 20 picks until I got back on the clock at 13-11. I double-tap quarterback, man. I went Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. And I don't know if we're going to love it or hate it, because, yes, we could talk about, like, one of those picks is possibly burned. But the other thing we need to talk about here is that, like, the way that I looked at this is, if we knew who the starter is for the Saints, if we knew that, that pick or player would have gone, like, 4 to 5 rounds maybe earlier than where they went in this draft. So, yes, could I be losing equity based off of that? Sure. But if both of these quarterbacks make starts this year, could this situation also be the fact of, like, when we saw Winston and Ryan Fitzpatrick and they combined for, like, the QB5 or whatever it was a few years ago in Tampa, that could be the situation too. So, at this spot, I feel like I needed to take the swing. But what are your thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, I 100% agree. Like, if Sean Payton came out 5 days before SFB started and said, Jameis Winston, 1,000%, will start at quarterback for the Saints this year. You know, he's going, and to be fair, maybe he doesn't, because you lose 4 points for interception in this league. And can you imagine? Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go back and look at what he would have finished as in, what, 2019, where he had, like, the 30-30 season? Like, would he just not scored any fantasy points that season? Like, would everything have just...
So, do you want to hear his scoring breakdown? Because it's absolutely fabulous, Adam.
I do. I 100% do.
Let's talk about the ebbs and flows of Jameis Winston scoring in this format for 2019. -9, 11, 23, 32, 10, -9, 0, 10, 24, 1.3, 26. Like, good Lord. There's another -10.
That is absolutely one of the greatest things I've ever heard in my life. That's so good.
That's so insane, man. Like, but you look at Taysom Hill when he was under center last year, dude. Positive results, man. 29, 12, 33, 22. Yeah. I mean, the efficiency.
And we talked
there,
about
so.
It. I wrote about, so I have an article. It's free to read at FTN Fantasy, where I debate Keenan Allen and Michael Thomas. You know, I'm going to be debating a lot of players coming off the board close to each other. And when I talked about Michael Thomas, I got into the Taysom Hill thing, if he's the quarterback. He was top five, if you look at our advanced stats, I wrote about it in the article, in terms of first read percentage. Like, he threw to his first read at one of the highest rates among all quarterbacks. Obviously, we talked about it. That was Michael Thomas. What are Michael Thomas's routes? The quick intermediate stuff. They're not going to ask Taysom Hill to throw the ball down the field. And then hopefully in year two, if he's starting, year two of him starting and playing quarterback, he throws to Alvin Kamara more, which are obviously immensely easily convertible targets. So if he's, like, either way, like, you have the more of the, like this, like you said, the ebbs and flows of Jameis. But if Taysom could be really good in this format, because he's going to run and he's going to run for first downs, he's going to have a high completion percentage in this system. They're not going to ask him to throw deep down the field with Traquan Smith and, you know, why am I blanking on the other receiver who returns kicks for them? Deontay Harris. Like, they're not asking, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara.
The right answer for that was going to be Adam Troutman, but anyway, I digress.
To be fair, I was concluding Troutman in more of a focal point, because I expect him to have more of a focal point than Deontay Harris and Traquan. Okay. But yeah, like, Taysom could be really good in this format.
he could be fantastic, man. Both are like regarding like rushing and the first downs and the efficiency and the fact that he is limiting in his turnovers. I know everybody else like talks about fumbles and stuff like that. Oh, this is not a 4 point per fumble league, so get up on my mentions. As well as a lot of those fumbles came when he was.
If
used
it was
as a receiver,
Daniel Jones would not be drafted at all. If that was the case.
That's pretty fair.
I don't think anybody would want to draft him. Like I think they'd be terrified.
Well, and then I think you get negative points for turf monsters as well. So I mean that has to be brought up here. But anyway, yikes. Man. I mean, moving on. Like, I'm happy with the team so far. Again, looking at later round picks, I'm probably going to be shooting for high upside wide receivers. If they get, like last year, dude, my 17th, 18th round picks, a lot of the guys that I got at the very end of the draft were like, not to toot my own horn, but I mean, they were pretty, pretty nice as far as like, if you're looking at what they decided to do down the stretch, Adam, I mean, let's lay this out here for a second, my friend. My Scott Fishbowl draft last year, towards the end, reading off my 12th through, let's go 12 through 17. Antonio Gibson, Zach Moss, Brandon Ayuk, that's pretty. Darrington Evans, Joshua Kelly, ouch and ouch.
Wait, I got T. Higgins. You got the poor man's Alvin Kamara, Darrington Evans?
Yeah, man. I mean, so in on him again. Oh, my God. That blurb was funny, by the way. But, I mean, this is all saying that you need to take these shots late. And, dude, I actually drafted Jalen Hurts in my 20th round pick as well. So,
wow.
You got to take shots late for these backups that if they get a chance, the talent's there, a lot of these rookies that could explode down the stretch for you. But how's your team? What round are you in right now, man? How's your team stacking up so far?
Yeah, so we just kicked off the 8th round this morning, and I started it off. I had the 712 and the 801, but my team, like I said, I had the 101, so it wasn't like a consensus thing. We've seen a lot of people go McCaffrey. Some people, I think Elliott went Kelsey. Kyler's gone first, I think, in some leagues, but I went Mahomes. Followed it up with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who you've been really high on, and then I've, from talking to you, I'm really getting just immensely high in Clyde.
Let's go.
So I like him. And then this is where I kind of got weird a little bit. And this pick could go really well or go poorly. But I went DeAndre Swift. And okay. I went Swift because I think we know that, like, he's either going to have, like, I think he's either going to be, like, off receptions and just being really efficient behind that offensive line and playing from behind if he gets those receptions. I think he's got, like, top five or in his potential, or he's going to be, like, 17. I don't think he's going to be, like, running back 8, like, you know what I mean, like, and that's kind of what I wanted in this draft, somebody that could be like elite, or if they're not, like, oh well, you know. I haven't loved Swift this offseason, but yeah, he is going to be getting high value touches, and I like Jamal Williams, but like I think this Lions offensive line is going to do him a lot of favors here in this format too. And then I went I was going to go with more running backs and quarterbacks. And I was kind of in agreement with you. I was going to kind of fade receivers a little bit at first. But, man, CeeDee Lamb and DJ Moore were just sitting there for me at the 4-5 turn.
Oof.
And, like, DJ Moore is the guy for me. Like, I'm just drafting him everywhere. CeeDee, we know the upside he presents. So I thought that was fun. Went Mark Andrews as well.
I think there's a dynasty league out there somewhere where you don't have DJ Moore, although I could be remiss, and I don't know if we're going to be talking about this later in the week, but
yeah, it's
sure
weird.
There is.
It's weird, too, because I actually just quit that dynasty league about 13 seconds ago, so. But no, then I have Mark Andrews, because obviously Ted and Premium, TJ Hockenson was on the board at this time, and I do have Hockenson one spot ahead of Andrews, but I did not feel good about, you know, double stacking the Detroit Lions offense. Call me crazy. So I went with Andrews as more of a tiebreaker. He's obviously, like, we know there's a drop off at tight end after you get whatever order you have it. It's obviously Kelsey, Kittle, Waller, Andrews, Hockenson. I think Pitts is still behind those two, and I think I got Andrews after Pitts. Obviously, Pitts has immense upside, so if you take Pitts there, obviously it's a good pick still. But I was happy to get Andrews where I got him. And then my latest two picks, Carson Wentz, my quarterback 2, I went with a 7-12. Like I talked about, I was happy to get him in this format. The offensive line should be better with the Colts. The weapons in the Colts offense are going to be better. It's a lot of high percentage passes, right? It's going to be a lot of throwing to the running backs and tight ends. So I think Wentz could be sneaky good in this format. And then my last pick I just made, a player I really like in this format, a player that I have not drafted really at all other than some underdog best balls, is Kenny Galladay, who, talk about points like for first down, 78% of this guy's career receptions have come on or have led to first downs. We know he has upside deep down the field. And you talked about like first downs being a volume stat, and they are, but if you're not going to find a guy with immense volume, like Kenny Galladay probably won't see like 160. He's not going to see like Allen Robinson type targets, for example, but they're going to be deep down the field. So like if he's catching a pass, he's not catching screens or, you know, 5 yard outs. Like he's going to be among the league leaders in ADOT. So like a lot of his catches are going to be once again, first downs. So I actually really like him this format. I took him ahead of guys that I normally wouldn't take him over, right? Like I'll look right now, but at some of the receivers that are still on the board, but like I took him over, like T Higgins. That was the debate I had. It was him and T Higgins. I ended up going Galladay, but that's my team right now. It's Mahomes, Wentz, Clyde, Swift, DJ Moore, CeeDee Lamb, Kenny Galladay, and Mark Andrews. And I don't hate it.
No, I like the Galladay pick because the thing of it is we're talking about taking swings. You and I have talked about the wide range of outcomes for the Giants. And, I mean, I wrote this up over at FTN Fantasy, like, in looking at advanced analytics about before you attack your drafts, like, the Giants over the first 5 weeks were a top five passing rate team in the NFL. So, like, we've talked about the range of outcomes multiple times for that passing offense. There is a range of outcomes where Kenny Galladay is getting a 25 to 27% target share, 28, whatever number you want to peg that at for the high point of it. There is a range of outcomes where this Giants team is top 5 to 7 in passing rate, and Kenny Galladay is eating. Like, he is basically the Giants' version of Allen Robinson, and he's eating and he's getting a ton of volume. So I don't hate that pick at all for taking swings. His range of outcomes and his ceiling, I think, is very comparable, hell, if not higher than T. Higgins. So if we're taking swings and we're talking about a range of outcomes, I think Galladay has a higher range of outcomes to be a top 12 receiver in this format versus T. Higgins. Jamar Chase or Tyler Boyd is going to have to get hurt.
That's exactly why I went Galladay. I literally said to myself, if both players hit their absolute ceiling and injuries are not part of the equation, Galladay is going to have the higher ceiling just because you expect him to get more targets as the alpha on that team. But like,
love that.
I've talked about a lot of these players in redraft. Like Deontay Johnson, I have a lot higher in redraft. Not a lot higher, but like five spots higher than Kenny Galladay. He was on the board. I went Galladay. Juju, who I still like, I think everybody's just kind of out on Juju. I still like Juju. I went Galladay. I went Galladay over Ayuk, Odell Beckham, Cortland Sutton, Robbie Anderson, who I love. So I definitely did take Galladay over players that I would normally prefer. But again, that's kind of where the format and the scoring and everything kind of plays a part.
I agree with you. Like, I agree with you taking that shot on Galladay because his range of outcomes is so much higher than all the other wide receivers that you rattled off. And again, we're talking about the scoring. Dude, there is no draft in redraft that I will ever consider taking freaking TJ Hockenson at the 402. Yeah. But it's got Fishbowl. We're talking about range of outcomes, okay? Like, you went with Andrews and stuff, and I understand not wanting to go TJ Hockenson and doubling down on an offense that's not going to be high scoring. I get that. You made your bet on DeAndre Swift. I made my bet on TJ Hockenson. And the reason I went Hockenson over like one of these elite volume wide receivers at that spot is, yes, it's tight end premium, but there is a range of outcomes, okay, where you saw Darren Waller, you saw Travis Kelce, George Kittle, all of these other guys were top two round picks. Going with Hockenson in the fourth round, there is a range of outcomes where he gets a 25 to 27% target share. There is a range of outcomes for TJ Hockenson where he gets the targets and he gets the volume and he scores enough touchdowns this year where he vaults himself into the top three tight ends in this scoring format. And if he does that, Adam, then I just got a top three tight end 2 to 3 rounds later than the other three guys going off the board. So, I mean, tell me your thoughts there. Do you think that TJ Hockenson has that in his range of outcomes? Because I do. I think that he could end up with 130 targets this year. I know that sounds crazy, But in his absolute ceiling range of outcomes, I think it can happen.
Here's my take on the tight ends. Obviously, tight end premium, so whatever. Like they're gonna get vaulted up in this format. I honestly don't think you should project a tight end to have more targets than Hockenson in the NFL outside of Kelce and Waller. Kittle will probably be close, but I don't think you can safely project any other tight end with more targets than Hockenson. I really don't. So like, it's kind of that simple for me. And on like a per, like efficiency numbers wise for his career, he's been underwhelming, but like whatever, like it's tight end, just chase routes and chase volume. And that's what Hockenson's going to have in boatloads this year. So yeah, like, and I actually have to correct myself. Kyle Pitts went after I took Mark Andrews. So, I took Andrews at the 401 just because I wasn't picking again for a long time, knew those tight ends were going to be gone. And it basically came down to the fact that I already had Swift. I didn't want to invest too much in Detroit's offense. So I did go Andrews, but it went Andrews at the 401 to me. Hockenson went to 404. Then Kyle Pitts ended up going at the 409. So, that's where the tight ends after the top three went in my draft. And then, of course, Kelce's a top five pick in this format pretty much everywhere, I would say. Sometimes it goes like the 107 or whatever. Waller went the end of the first round, and Kittle went in the beginning of the second round.
So to close this out, Adam, I guess like, and I mean, our drafts be damned, because we might be hurting ourselves here too, but who are some players that you're looking at for the last, like, round, maybe two of your draft? Like, the very end of the end of the end of the draft. Give me, like, two targets, two guys you're hoping to grab.
I haven't really gotten that far yet to think about this, but I will say I'm not, like...
Oh, sorry, I'm, like, six rounds ahead of you.
Yeah, yeah, right. Like, I'm still I'm already kind of discussing this. Calm down.
Yeah, I get it.
Why don't you calm down? We're only in the eighth round over here. But I will say, like, I'm not, like, writing him down, you know, draft day style Vontae Mack, no matter what. But like a sneaky, there's plenty of people who didn't go quarterback early in this draft and are kind of just taking not the value, but they're just loading up at the skill position players. There's teams that have like Barkley and Kamara and Aaron Jones in their team because they didn't go quarterback, and that's going to put you behind the eight ball quarterback. So I will say one guy who you're not going to, you know, have massive numbers, we don't think, but in this format, if you just need somebody to play quarterback for you for some weeks, Tyrod Taylor has one of the lowest interception rates in NFL history, and he might start games for the Texans this year. And he runs. Wouldn't be the worst pick at the very end, especially if you passed on quarterbacks in the first, you know, five rounds or so. Because, like, think about it. If say you didn't go quarterback in your first five picks, you're probably starting, like, a Daniel Jones, I don't know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Sam Darnold. Darnold's another guy that's not bad, but like that means you're going to have to also get quarterbacks on your bench because it's super flex and because things can change. And I think Tyrod could be kind of same with Teddy, but Tyrod's the guy that's going to go like way, way late. And kind of how you mentioned with who'd you mention again? The quarterback you were going to go late? Why am I drawing a blank?
From Taylor Washington. Heineke.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yep, kind of similar.
One of my targets, last pick of the draft. If Fitzpatrick does what Fitzpatrick does and he throws like three interceptions, Heineke. And look, we saw him when he was able to play. This is still going to be a good offense, Adam. He can run. Like he is going to be one of the last picks out of my SFB draft, unless I get sniped by one of my division mates. Now
I'm definitely DMing somebody in your division right now.
Just go ahead. They're really easy to find, Adam. Just head over to Twitter and you find one of these guys in the 13th round. It's probably in the MCR division.
But yeah, I think there's still some quarterbacks down there, right? And like, has anybody drafted Deshaun Watson in your league yet? Because that could be like the ultimate curveball.
He went, I want to say, in the 11th or 12th round. Somebody took the shot of there. So
I mean, if Watson plays this year, that's not fair. Because you're going to get a top five quarterback. I don't want to say it's not fair because what did we see last year? There were situations the last couple of years at SFB where like there was, because we're starting these drafts in July, where something happens and all of a sudden like you're golden. Like I can imagine, like remember when what was it, a couple of years ago when Spencer Ware got hurt and Kareem Hunt was just like, stuff like that's going to happen in SFB.
Yeah, and I mean, so two of the late targets for me, yes, Taylor Heinicke is one of them. I mean, a lot of this, we've been talking about a lot of these targets in best ball, and I mean, whether this is like late dynasty targets too. Two of the names that pop up that come to mind for me, whether it's Taylor Heinicke, I will be considering Foster Moreau with one of my final picks. And the reason I'm going to pull him up out of here is because if anything happens to Darren Waller, and again, we're not projecting injuries, but you're talking about guys that are one injury away. Foster Moreau is a guy that has like athleticism for damn days. He's been uber efficient when he's been given the opportunities. You're talking about a tight end premium league, Adam. The Raiders' target tree is a little bit unsettled. Like, yes, I love Bryan Edwards, and I'll probably grab him late as well. But, like, could we say in a tight end premium league, if anything were to happen to Darren Waller, Foster Moreau is going to walk into red zone work and maybe, what, a 15 to 18% target share at the tight end position because Witten's not there anymore?
Here's a good one. Why don't you just draft the Jets starting tight end and draft Tyler Croft?
No, can't do it. Nope. And I'm not going to talk about Chris Herndon. Not going to talk about him.
Yeah, I'm joking. I don't think he's definitely not going to go as late as Foster Moreau, but Dan Arnold.
Yes, good pick.
I like Dan Arnold. We saw him in Arizona. He's not a tight end that just, you know, catches the ball and like he's a downfield tight end. The offense is going to be better. And yeah, I mean, right now, obviously, like DJ Moore, McCaffrey, Robbie, and Terrace Marshall are going to be, you know, higher up in terms of the targets. But they got like Ian Thomas ran routes for fun last year just to see if what would happen, essentially. Like they didn't even look
just
his way.
Just out there, just Fitbitten.
Yeah, I wonder if they want to get a little bit more out of Dan Arnold than they got of Ian Thomas, which really only takes one game of production. But Dan, I guess if I had to give you a guy, it'd be Dan Arnold. And I was going to mention a Miami tight end because Tua went and looked at tight ends a lot. It's just, who do you go with? Do you go with Hunter Long late, I guess, but they still have you Shaheen. Mm-hmm. Like they're going to use a multitude of tight ends. So, but yeah, I mean, that's where that's like in other drafts, it's like, oh, you're getting those bottom picks. This is boring, but this is where it's kind of more, I would say more fun because you're getting those home run shots potentially.
Well, and I'll bring up one more rookie, and I talked about him in a few various spots, but whether
does he play for the
Discord
Rams
channel? I actually wasn't gonna bring up Jacob Harris, but now I gotta.
Yeah, that's where I thought you were. I really thought you were going there.
I wasn't gonna go the Jacob Harris route, but I like that call. Yeah, he'll be on the radar. But the other guy, and we're talking about tight end premium, so staying on the tight end position.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about uncertainty, it's going to be a trash can roster. They're going to have to throw at him. I'm still in on Brevin Jordan or
that's right.
Even
that's okay.
If you wanted to go Jordan Akins. One of those guys walking into some type of like Evan Engram type of season.
Dude, and look, like possible, Cooks is the guy, but then what else, right? It's you have Nico Collins.
Who are you going with, Nico?
Nico like, Collins is a rookie. Randall Cobb, we know what Randall Cobb's going to be. And like, this is a team, yes, they're probably not going to get inside the red zone as often as any other team in the league. They're going to be bad. But who are they throwing to down there? They have no size other than Nico Collins. Brandon Cooks, not a huge receiver. Randall Cobb, small slot receiver. Andre freaking Roberts is like their number three receiver potentially right now. Maybe the tight ends get involved there. I think it's a good call as well.
Yeah, so Akins, Brevin Jordan, one of those guys. It depends on how deep you want to go with that. I understand all the rookie tight end narratives. Yeah, so go Akins. That's fine. But my point is that there is somebody there that we're talking about tight end premium, and that's kind of why I'm leaning into this position and talking about these late targets. You can go with running backs and whatever, basically one injury away type of guys that could be a league winner in this format or just hell. An 18th round pick, and then all of a sudden they're breaking off runs and they're walking into 15 touch weeks that are going to pay off for you in this format because the waiver wire is going to be quite thin considering we're talking about this is so deep. It's very, very similar to Dynasty in that aspect and doing a Dynasty startup.
SFB's always been tight end premium, right?
The last 2 years prior to that, I
can
don't
you imagine
it was.
How did imagine not like how many leagues or how. Darren Waller, two years ago.
Dude, even last year, Logan Thomas, Robert Tonyan. Like,
yeah,
I remember
but I'm just saying Darren Waller in like Well, I guess that was the same year Andrews broke out too, huh? They both broke out that year. I mean, that was.
I was sad last year whenever. I was sad last year whenever I didn't get Jay Sternberger, and then it ends up being Robert Tonyan, and he smashes in this format, man.
To be fair, Tonyan had a 19% touchdown rate. It was so stupid.
I know, man, but the thing about it is in this format, you need to be looking at those tight ends late because we're talking about you're playing the scoring settings and stuff too. Keep the other positions in mind as well, and Adam had kind of given we've laid out a few different avenues to attack those positions, but that's all this stuff for Scott Fishbowl, everyone. Again, Adam and I are going to be back later this week. We got Jamie Eisenberg stopping by the show. We're going to talk more fantasy football, as well as Chris Amini's going to be in the house. We're going to discuss one of our Dynasty startups that we're all in, walking through strategy and Dynasty, walking through what we're attacking and how we're looking at these startups. So we're going to get you ready for week one. The season is right around the corner. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.